And now, to answer some of those questions about vaccination, I'll turn it over to Jill and her subject matter expert, Dr. Mott.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Mark. And thanks again, Tom, for bringing your expertise to this venue. It's always appreciated.
Thank you.
So, as I mentioned before, Dr. Mott doesn't know any of the questions I'm about to ask him. And so here I go. Are you ready, Dr. Mott?
I'm ready. Go ahead, Jill.
All right. So as Dr. Morris mentioned, the Pfizer vaccine, now titled Comirnaty, is now fully approved by the FDA. What does that mean? What's the difference between how it was before under emergency use authorization versus now under full FDA approval?
Well, an emergency authorization means a drug or something will get approved because there's evidence that this medication shouldn't be withheld longer until full approval because it's already beneficial. And this is classically a vaccine, for example. The vaccine gets emergency release because it's clearly showing a promise in studies, and we don't have time to wait for the full approval. Now, a full approval means that a drug or the vaccine in that scenario has been fully vetted by the FDA. Keep in mind, to get an FDA approval, all the experts on the FDA have to vote for it. There has to be a clear majority. And in this case, it was actually anonymous. So it is clearly approved now because the safety, the benefit versus the risks were clearly vetted and shown that the benefit by far exceeds the risk. Hence, it's not fully FDA approved. By the way, other institutions like European equivalent of the FDA approved that vaccine already as well. And many other institutions, including the healthcare institution Israel and the UK, have all approved it too.
Thanks. And the name is interesting. So just for interest for those listening, the Comirnaty is because of COVID, the mRNA vaccine, the MER, and then community and immunity being the last portion. So it's
kind of, so people will probably still remain reminded or remembered as the Pfizer vaccine would be my guess. And in fact, in Epic, yes, we'll use that name plus Pfizer so people know what they got.
Yeah. And do we know if there is more discussion happening within the FDA or ACIP about boosters? Who needs a third dose right now? And what's the difference between those who need the third dose and boosters?
So booster, as you may know, is currently the hottest topic. And as you also know, it has been now recommended to every immune-compromised patient to get a booster. I think there will be, at least in the ID community, there's a big discussion also. And I think what will happen is that we will recommend a booster. The question for anybody, the question, of course, will be how we're going to do that. Should we just, for example, get the third Pfizer if you had Pfizer, or should we get a J&J vaccine if you got two Pfizer vaccines? So that is still in the making. Currently, what we recommend is if somebody got two and is immune compromising and two Pfizer vaccines, you should go to Pfizer vaccine booster. But in the future, I'm almost sure that we'll have a booster for everybody. We just have to work out the details at this juncture.
And, you know, with that, and I'm asking a lot of the questions that I hear as I go out into the community and have been doing Q&A, so kind of the latest questions, some of these are redundant, so I apologize for that. But can you tell me what the difference is between the flu vaccine and COVID vaccines? Why do we need a yearly flu vaccine, and are we going to need a yearly COVID vaccine?
Well, influenza is a unique virus, given that it can mutate at astonishing levels. Every virus mutates. You know, every virus mutates, so does COVID. But influenza mutates on a far different scale, and there's no other virus that does that. Again, the mutation of COVID is expected by any virus. And no, we will probably not require a yearly vaccine. The problem we're having, the reason that COVID is mutating at such a rate is simply because there's so many vulnerable people that could have been entirely avoidable if you would have vaccinated more people and would have achieved herd immunity. If we achieve herd immunity, it's highly unlikely that the virus will cause another epidemic. Of course, it will continue, or pandemic. Of course, it will continue to mutate, but it will not be like influenza. And needless to say, the influenza vaccine, as we all know, sometimes is effective, sometimes isn't. The COVID vaccine is effective. It's not comparable to influenza at all. The only comparison I make is that influenza is a respiratory virus and so is COVID. But COVID is much more serious, spreads much quicker than influenza. It does not mutate on the same rate. It doesn't have any genetic drift or shift that influenza does. So for the virologists between us, again, this is an entirely different virus.
Yeah, and thanks. You touched on one of the questions I get. You know, if there is a chance for breakthrough infections, and there is a chance if you're vaccinated that you could indeed spread the virus. Tell me how herd immunity, or in other words, more people getting the vaccine, really does help our communities decrease spread. How does that work?
Well, for example, if you have herd immunity, you know, this is misconception. I hear that all the time that, yes, I got the vaccine, but what's the benefit? I'm spreading it anyway. That's not entirely true. What we do know is that there is breakthrough asymptomatic infections with COVID even after the vaccine. Again, asymptomatic breakthrough infections. And of course, hypothetically, when you have a breakthrough infection that's asymptomatic, you're able to spread the virus. But there's all data support that the likelihood that you spread COVID, even if you're asymptomatic, or even if you get an asymptomatic infection after the vaccine, is much, 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 much less likely than an asymptomatic actual natural infection. So if we're able to achieve herd immunity, we can spread it to our neighbors. Now, our neighbors won't spread it to their children, and the virus ultimately has a much less of a reservoir to continue to mutate. That's one of the big problems, because we have so many unvaccinated people, the virus can continuously mutate. And of course, the goal of the virus is to become as infectious as possible. That's the benefit of mutation. But no, if you achieve herd immunity, we will have several things. First, we will have much less sick people, of course. We will hopefully not be able to spread it to any immune compromised patients that don't have any good immunity despite vaccinations. And don't allow the virus to mutate, because there's not a large reservoir where it can do so. Not to mention that people do get COVID despite the vaccine, the likelihood that they shed the virus is much shorter.
Thanks. And I think, you know, I hear that term natural immunity a lot, which I don't really love that term, because I think when the term natural is used, sometimes people assume that it's better. And so, and obviously we have lots of things in nature that are not safe. And one of those things that is natural is COVID. So can you explain why it's, why getting the vaccine is better than getting immunity from the disease itself?
Yeah, you as a pediatrician must love the term natural immunity, because that sounds almost like organic, right? It's much better than the chemical vaccine you get. Well, it's pretty simple, right? Because if someone gets COVID, we have no idea how sick you get, right? All people argue, well, it's like a passing illness and I just lose my smell for a couple of days. Well, that's not true, right? COVID can go on and you end up in intensive care. Or you can have long-term sequelae. I've seen people that have profound neuropathy. I have people that have chronic meningitis. There's lots of sequelae that you get from natural immunity, right? You don't get that from the vaccine at all. If you get the vaccine, you know, the likelihood that it experience any adverse effects is in any way comparable to the natural illness, or the risk of that is neglected. So, no, I'm a big advocate against natural immunity, because natural immunity always knows it comes with a lot of unknowns. And again, you can get much, much sicker than anticipate. If people like to talk about natural immunity, let's take measles, right? Measles, natural immunity can cause a profound encephalopathy. Not a good idea. No, I'm not a big advocate for natural immunity if there's a vaccine available. You can also get natural immune to tetanus and on the way die. No, we should not argue for natural immunity.
Yeah. And you touched on some of the concerns about side effects from the vaccine. One of the things, and obviously, you know, we previously discussed the potential risk for clots and J&J and the comparison to the disease itself. I still hear a lot of people concerned even about blood clots with Pfizer and Moderna. Can you just touch on blood clots as a potential side effect to the vaccine?
Yes. As you may know, at the J&J vaccine, which was widely given in Europe, has been briefly withdrawn from the vaccine administration because it was concerned. Now, there have been very few reports of a very rare clot specifically associated with the J&J. We really have not much with the Pfizer or with the Moderna vaccine at all. The risk of getting clotting from COVID is rather high. And, you know, the hospitals can certainly attest to that, because they use prophylaxis for such. And I've seen just recently a patient who chose not to be vaccinated has a massive PE. So the risk of clotting from the natural disease, or the natural immunity, if you want to call it, is rather high. The risk of getting a clot from any of the mRNA vaccines is negligible. In fact, so small that we don't even know if the vaccine is at fault or this is just coincidence. The risk of getting a clot from the J&J vaccine is higher than from the mRNA vaccine, but that itself is still rather low. And establishing, given we give so many vaccines, establishing the clear etiology, meaning was it a vaccine or was it just coincidence they got the vaccine and then they got a PE because they were traveling somewhere or they had a surgery, that's not entirely clear. I think overall the vaccine is safe and the risk of getting a clot following the vaccine is neglectable.
Yeah, thanks. And one of the other questions that I have been hearing a lot, and so I do want to address it, and I think that you'll do an excellent job in doing so, is does the spike protein run around the body? So that's another one that seems to be like the spike protein now is rampant among your body once you get the vaccine. That's a most recent question.
Well, first, it isn't, of course, right? You can make a case and say the virus is rampant in your body because everybody gets viremic after that initial infection through the mucosa, right? So that we know. So what will happen, of course, you get the vaccine, and let's talk about the mRNA vaccine because they'll probably turn up the spike protein higher. What actually happens is you make spike protein from the mRNA vaccine, but you will cause an immune response, right? That's the whole idea. You make spike protein so that your body develops an immunity to it and will destroy it, of course. That's the whole idea, right? So the spike protein is a very temporary event. What will be a longer event is, of course, your immunity that you have triggered by that spike protein.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for answering that. And I guess I think we'll continue on. I'm going to ask one more question, though. If I already had COVID disease, do I still need to be vaccinated and why?
Yes. The reason we, by the way, that is the same question, and why would you need a booster, right? That falls into the same category roughly. And the reason for that is we think that your immunity to COVID wanes after about 6 months. Okay. It doesn't mean you have zero immunity, but of course, when immunity wanes, there's a high risk, for example, that you get asymptomatic COVID and might be able to spread it. So that's why you need to be revaccinated. So everybody that had natural immunity, so to speak, should still be vaccinated about 6 months after the fact.
Thanks again, Dr. Mott, for sharing your expertise with us today. And I'll pass things forward. But before I do want to mention that we have been talking a lot about hospital cases, and primarily over the past year have been talking about adults and COVID illness in adults. But as George presented earlier, we're certainly seeing an increase in cases in kids. So I just want people to kind of keep that on their minds as we continue to talk about kids. And I know Dave will touch on that here in just a second.
Thank you, Jill, and thank you, Tom. And I would agree, Cheryl, in the chat line said, Dr. Mott, you're awesome. We all wish we could record your answers and play them back for our patients and others who have questions. And we appreciate your straightforward answers that we always get. And to Jill's point about pediatric, I heard today that there's maybe one ICU bed, a pediatric ICU bed in all of the Dallas-Fort Worth area left this morning. So that may be coming our direction. And so something to pay attention to.